Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.
Hey, good morning, Rudy. Adam, appreciate everybody. Those of you that are tuning in, I'm yelling at my Facebook. Good morning, Trey. Everybody that's tuning in,
get down.
Follow me, so I'm definitely going to acknowledge them. Saturday morning, June 2nd, football in the morning. Saturday morning, June 2nd. That means it's time to go behind the blue curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. Like I said every week, good morning, Brother Wood. You know, this is not my show. This is our show. This is where everybody across the country and in five countries outside of the U.S. that follow me, you can call in and give your input and chime in and let your voice be heard. It's not necessary that you identify yourself. If you want to say the state or the city you're from, that's fine. And what we do on this show is we work on police, community relations, and also we have to deal with race relations because we can't fix one without fixing the other. We're going to step on some folks' feelings up in here. I can tell you, nobody is safe in here. In here is facts and truth. All of us have a story. All of us have something that we've gone through. Nobody's here to say that what you've gone through isn't true. You've lived it, so it's true to you, so that means we're going to all get educated. I'm just a facilitator of this. This is not my thing. This is our thing. In here, everybody's voice is equal. I don't care if you're the police chief, the mayor, 45 can call up here, congressmen, senators, preachers, titles don't mean anything in here. In here, everybody's equal. Everybody is equal. You can be in a back alley with an Obama phone and a Wi-Fi connection. And you know what? Up in here, you're somebody. You know, 646-716-4621 is the call-in number. And what we try to do is build on police-community relations. And we do that here by having a hard talk. Oh, we're going to hurt some feelings, but it's okay. You'll get over it. That doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. Okay, there's some changes that need to be made in the community. There's some changes that need to be made in policing. And we can't sit around twiddling our thumbs, pointing blame, because there's enough on this plate for everybody to eat out of. And some people ask, is he really a police officer? Is he really? Yes, I'm really a police officer. Worked last night. That's why I got this tired look. For those on the Facebook Live that are looking. But what I wanted to do today is kind of follow up on the sequence of shows. What I try to do with the shows is keep a form where we can constantly learn. You guys can always go to stanmason.com and you can download, go to the Listen tab. You can download all the radio shows. You can share them, do whatever you want to do with them. I own all the rights to them, so I'm not charging you guys. Do whatever you want to do with them. Just don't edit them in line because I'm going to have to put you on blast if you do. But you can also go to the Watch tab, and you can see my YouTube videos on varying aspects of policing. And once again, I don't speak for the city of Waco, the Waco Police Department, the officers, civilian employees, or the citizens of Waco. Everything that I talk about is based upon my professional and personal experiences. We all have experiences, so I happen to have some that maybe I can share some things and answer some questions for you guys. And at the same time, I want you guys to dialogue back and tell me some things that police need to change, because we're not particularly good at accepting constructive criticism. We're not very good at implementing change. Policing is an institution that is resistant to change. That's no individual's fault. It is the institution. So today what I wanted to talk about is, how do you meet with police administrators? You know, you always hear everybody, I'm going to see the chief. I'm going to see the chief. Then you get up there and you act like a fool. How do you go about getting real answers? The chief does not want to be, if they make time for you, and believe me, I mean, I'm hard on chiefs and I understand that, but they are very busy. And when they make time for you and you make an appointment, you can't go all up in there straight up ghetto. That's just not going to work. That chief is going to tune you out much like any of us would. If somebody comes in us sideways, we're going to tune them out. You know, and people can say, well, he does it. You know, we're human beings. You know, So a couple of things we want to do. First off, we got to understand we have a problem out there, a conflict. And most of these things that we see on Facebook could be solved if they were handled the right way by the police and by the citizen. Thing is, yeah, you got your police chief. But under him, you've got the assistant chief. Under the assistant chief, you got your commanders, captains, or lieutenants, whichever name your particular department gives them. Underneath that is the sergeant. The sergeant is out there in the field. By field, what I mean is they're out there in the street, just like the officers are. And the commanders or lieutenants or what, captains, whatever they call them, are usually out there also. So say you run into a problem or a conflict with an officer. When you're not communicating and you're not clicking, don't stand there and argue with that officer. That isn't going to get you anywhere. It's not going to get you anywhere. It's going to frustrate the officer. It's going to frustrate you. It's going to escalate this thing like we see so much on Facebook. You know, and I've seen on a lot of YouTube videos, I've seen where citizens have said, I want to speak to the supervisor. And they've been told, well, there's no supervisor available. We can't do it. That's drop a BS flag on that. There's no, the troops are not out there running the streets. There's a supervisor out there. They may not be readily available at that moment. It may take some time. So that's when you just simply say two words. I'll wait. Comply with the officer once while you're there, but make it known that you want to speak with the supervisor. Now, when you're going to talk with the supervisor or the commander, lieutenant, captain, the assistant chief, or even the chief, there's a couple of types of outcomes that you're going to have. Number one, your ultimate goal that you want is resolution. You want to enter into a conversation, whether it's with the chief, whether it's with anybody in that chain of command. You want resolution. That doesn't always mean you're going to win, and it doesn't always mean the police are going to win, but you want resolution. You want to come to some type of conclusion on this problem. Now, are you out on a fact-finding mission where you all you want to do is find out the facts that are going on relevant to whatever situation is taking place? Do you want to meet to argue? See, that's number three, arguing. Do you just want to get this meeting so you can vent and argue and blame that police administration for everything that's going on wrong in America or in your life or in that current situation? To the police, are you meeting with this citizen and meeting, is it a cover-up? Are you going to be transparent as far as you can be? Or are you going to try to cover up or hide some facts when the citizen is being transparent and they're doing all the things they need to do to open up the dialogue? Is either side meeting for the sake of placing blame? Do you just want to blame the other side for whatever brought the meeting about? Well, if you guys wouldn't have done this or if the police did this different, see, these are all things that are not going to yield good results. Are you both meeting and one of your objectives is to deflect? Deflect responsibility, deflect accountability. Well, that wasn't us, that was this group, but they did it because. So these are the types of outcomes that you can have if you deflect, if you blame, if you cover up, if you argue, if you're out there on fact-finding. But ultimately what you want is resolution. That's ultimately what you want when you meet with these police administrators. Now, the number one thing I want you guys to consider when you're sitting down and you're saying, okay, I'm going to meet with the chief or the captain or whoever it is. You set an appointment to meet with them. You need to get in a quiet place, away from all the stress, whatever event is leading you to do that, and ask yourself a question. Do I want the truth as I see it versus the facts and experiences? And that goes two ways. To the police, do you want the truth as you see it or based upon your experiences, or do you want the facts? So unless we're willing to both go into this dialogue seeking facts, standing, and explaining what these facts mean, we're not going to have a good outcome. It's going to be very adversarial, and it's going to get out of hand. You know, who do you bring? You know, so many times I see people walk into the chief's office with an entourage. You don't want to do that. That makes the chief feel bombarded. That makes the chief feel like, you know, everybody's coming to jump on me. You're not going to get a good outcome. Officers will shut down. If you have a concern, bring only the people who are relevant to the problem. Just them. We don't need Great Annie and Great Aunt and Uncle Boo Boo that just flew in and this person and everybody wants to go up in there and have an opinion. No, bring only the people who are relevant to the conversation. And then when you get there, everybody can't speak. Everybody is not going to be able to speak. Limit your speakers. In other words, if you're meeting with the chief, generally you don't need any more than two people. You don't need three. You don't need four. You don't need a scribe and a secretary and all that. It's your problem. You do your research, and then what you need to do is write out short, simple questions. Things that you want to know. Very short, very simple. Not a 2.5 minute long geopolitical tirade with a question mark at the end that you expect the chief to stand there and follow and be able to give an answer. Very short questions that you want to ask. And then before you go there, practice asking those questions. You better go in there with a notepad. This is what a notepad looks like, in case people don't know or forgot, because I know we're in the technology age. You don't need to take your iPad in there and try to act all technical and look like you know what you're doing. Just go on in there with an old-fashioned notepad, and one of these things is called a pen. Take it in there with you, and you've got your questions written out. You leave enough space to where you can write down the responses to those questions, okay? But you need to practice that. Practice it before you go in there. Don't wait till you go in there, because one of the things police officers don't want to hear, we hear it a lot on calls. We go to a call, and the first thing people want to do is tell you, well, you know, I think it was last Saturday, but hey, when was that? Was that 2 weeks ago? We don't have time for that. Let's go on and get to the point. The chief's time is precious. And he's giving you that time. You're getting that time. Get in there. Handle business. Your employers don't want to sit and listen to a long, I'll figure it out as we go scenario. It makes you look ill-prepared, and it makes you feel like you're disconnected from your own problem. Go in there. Practice your questions. Have them down pat. Get in there. Ask question number one. Write your answer down. Ask them, can I do a follow-up on that, chief? Yeah, you mentioned this. How do you feel about this or that? So you want to do that. Stick to your script. Whatever questions you have written, stay with that. If you've only got 10, you stay with those 10. Don't go off chasing somebody down the rabbit hole on a whole nother side issue, because that's going to make you look ill-prepared. It's going to make you look scatterbrained, and you're going to confuse the whole meeting. So you want to stay on script. Be thoughtful and open to answers. Be thoughtful and open to answers. I know if you're meeting with the chief, generally it's a hot-button issue. It's not something that you know, you can, most people will be calm about, but chances are you're not meeting with the chief the day it happened. Get yourself calm when you go in there as best you can, because you got to remember, whatever incident you're going through, chances are the chief wasn't there. So don't go in there yelling at him or her. Take your time, get your questions right, stick to your script, be thoughtful and open to answers. You don't have to agree with the chief, because he or she is not going to agree with everything you say. But you can say things like, I understand what you're saying. Or if you don't, just say, I don't quite understand what you mean. Could you explain it? And you write these answers. You know, write them down. And please, for God's sake, dress appropriately. No one is going to take you serious walking into a scheduled meeting, whether it's with a sergeant, a commander, chief, or whatever, a scheduled meeting, not impromptu, in house shoes, hair looking all crazy, four or five people with you, pants hanging off your butt. No, you dress appropriately. You don't have to wear a suit and tie, but just put on some decent clothes and walk in there and present yourself. If your problem is that important to you, dress like it's important. You know, you can't bring an important issue before any official and you look shabby and confused. So you got to make sure you dress decent. You know, now, we talked about notes. We're going to hit these notes real quick. What do you do in these notes? You say, okay, I'm going to take notes. What do I put in my notes? All right, here's some things you got. I hope you got pens and pencils. If not, get this show later and download it. First thing you want to have in your notes is the date. What is the date that you're there? What is the time that you arrived at the police department and you walked in that front door? Because it's video. You want to have your time right. What is the weather like outside? Now, people say, well, why am I worried about the weather? Because when they say 6 months from now, I don't remember ever meeting with you. When you can say what the weather was, it was cloudy, it was sunny, it was rainy, it was in the middle of a tornado, whatever, that gives some credibility to your note-taking. You're setting up your note-taking to be consistent and for people to take you serious. What was the temperature outside? Was it 35 degrees? Was it 85 degrees? That should all be at the top line of your notepad, okay? Once you get in there, you know, what is the secretary's name? Write her name, secretary, and write her name, okay? You go into the chief's office. You know, describe what the office looks like. Just short bullet statements. You know, there's a picture of Picasso on the wall. He's got a picture of his family, left front corner of his desk. You know, what is the chief wearing? You know, he's wearing a gray suit with a red tie. You know, put these things in there because these things lend credibility to your notes. You got to describe the environment. It makes people know that you're on point. And when you're taking notes, they're going to know you're serious. You haven't even asked a question. You're already writing notes. And they say, well, what are you doing? Don't keep secrets. I'm documenting the environment to add credibility to my notes. It's not that I don't trust you, Chief. I know things get lost in the shuffle sometimes, but I want to make sure that I am as accurate as I can be in recording all of this, okay? Then once you get in there, like I said, notice the plaques on the wall, who's dressed where, who all is in the room. If there are other people in the room, get their names. What are their names? What are their badge numbers? What is their position in the department? You know, most meetings like that aren't generally recorded. I don't think the chiefs are going to record you, and I don't think they're going to let you record them. So for folks that say, well, I couldn't record you, that's why you break out these old-fashioned things called a pen and a tablet, and you write. Because, you know, anybody who's ever interacted with us out on the street, we can talk to you all day long, but the minute something becomes important, you'll see officers reach in their pocket and get out that little pad and pencil, and we start writing. Why are we writing? Because you're saying something that's important. And the power of writing, no matter who you're dealing with, whether it's a chief, a preacher, a politician, when you all of a sudden produce a pen and something to write on, and you start writing, watch their face. They're like, uh-oh, this person's serious. They're not playing. Like when we start writing, folks, the whole demeanor changes. What you writing for? Why are you writing that down? Because you're saying it. It's important. That gives you credibility. It gives you credibility. I already got one caller in. Real quick, I'm just going to go back over this real quick. You know, the types of outcomes that you want to have going in. Do you want resolution to your problem? Are you going there fact-finding? Are you trying to find out what happened about a particular event? You know, what caused these officers to be here at this time in this place, Chief? What went on with it? Are you going in there just to argue? Because I can tell you that's going to be a short meeting. You're going to develop a negative name within the police departments, and they're going to be hesitant to even want to deal with you. And that makes you ineffective. No matter how intelligent or articulate you can be, if you go in there and act crazy, they're not going to deal with you. And you become detrimental to your own resolution of your problem, okay? To both the citizens and the police, are you going in there to cover up some mess? If the chief asks a question and you know little Ray Ray did whatever, don't sit there and cover it up. You don't have to snitch on them, but you can't get resolution if you're not going to bring all the facts on the table. We want the police department to be transparent. We got to be that way too, you know? So you want to make sure you do that. Blame. If you go in and your big thing is to point blame, the police department did this, the police department did that, the police department, you don't know the facts around what brought the police department there. You know what people think they are. You know what you've heard on the street. But you don't know what brought that officer there. Have you seen the dispatch transcript? Have you heard the call from 911 call or whatever call that brought the officers there? So we have to go in understanding you don't know all the facts. That's why you're there. You want to learn the facts. You want to learn what happened, what led to this outcome. Okay? And then we're not there to deflect. That means we all got to eat some crow. You know, yes, my nephew shouldn't have did what he did. He was absolutely wrong. I have no problem with that, Chief, but I just didn't understand why this was done this way. Is that procedure? Can you show me in your general orders or in your manual where that is procedure? I have a problem with how this was done, not that it was done. See, that's open-mindedness. We have to stop protecting folks who, you know, need to be where they were at. We don't agree with the system that took them there, and that's great. But we can question the system, but we can't deflect or place blame on the officers that are out there doing what the system is written and telling them to do. So that's why we want to affect this change. At this time, I got one caller in here from the 804. I think that's Big Gus. What's going on, brother?
My brother, how you feeling today?
All right. Good morning. Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Good topic, man. Hey, look, I think some of the problem is citizenry don't trust police administrators. because they already go in with a preconceived notion that that they're going to take the sides of the police anyway. So that's why it's kind of hard when they have the meetings, and it's hard for them to stay on task. You're right. You're correct, man. You have to go into a meeting with someone correct, and you have to be genuinely concerned about what you're talking about, and hopefully the chief would be receptive to it and not just passing it off as people getting mad because a particular police officer is doing his job. But you're correct in saying that you have to look the part. And somewhat, if you're just coming in off the street for a meeting, but if you have time to prepare to meet with the police chief, then the steps that you listed, you should follow. For instance, if you go to a job interview, man, you got to dress the part, whether it's a construction job or digging a ditch. You should wear a suit and tie. So creating the proper atmosphere, for a meeting with the chief at ease. And you're right. If you start bombarding people with a whole bunch of questions, whether it be the chief or not, they're going to just go in one ear and out the other because he ain't going to have time to answer anything if you're just throwing questions at him. Be sincere when you go and ask him questions. And then if you don't like the answers that he's giving you, then follow up. And for the most part, police chiefs will cater to your questions or give the best answer that they could at the time.
Well, but I'll tell you something, Gus, and I think this is something that frustrates the community now. Chiefs, you don't know everything. When you don't know, tell these people you don't know. And when you say, I will get back to you, get back to them like you get back to the city manager. Get back to them like you get back to the mayor. Get back to them like you get back to your command staff. For these citizens don't work for us. If you tell them, no, I don't know, let me look into it and I'll get back to you. Within 5 days, get back to them. Because when you don't, guess what? They're going to go to the media because it's a taking notes. They're going to be able to say, this date, this time, I went in, asked Chief this. He didn't know. He said he'd get back to me. It's been a month. I'm waiting to hear. We hear those stories all the time. And I know chiefs are busy. But somebody in that office needs to get back to the citizen when they're not expected to have all the answers. None of us do. But if you say, let me research it, let me find out what went on with this, and I'll get back to you, then do it. Because the first time you don't and you burn that bridge, your word is no good. People aren't going to accept that. See, this kind of goes back. You remember the show we did on civilian police chiefs where I talked about, citizens who have either a master's or a PhD in human resource management, why can't they be considered to apply for the position of chief? The chief is nothing but a human resource manager. He's not writing tickets and doing burglary reports or working wrecks. He's a human resource manager / politician. And I'm not dogging them. That's just what they do. But if you've got citizens out here and that's all they've gone to school to do is be a human resource manager, and they're good, if they can run, IBM and Microsoft and Apple and everything else, Coca-Cola, Amazon, I think they can handle, some little 300-man police department, or in Dallas's case, where there are 1,000 people under, but they can handle managing people. That's what these people went to school for. And for people to think that's an alien concept, your sheriffs are elected, and they don't have to be police officers when they're elected. They could be working in Home Depot. And if they run for sheriff and get elected, guess what? They're no longer putting up sheetrock. They're up there running the sheriff's department. And it also gives the citizens a tie-in where they feel, okay, this is one of us in there, not somebody who's been a police officer for 20, 30 years and is so indoctrinated in this that sometimes we can't see beyond our own profession. And we see the citizens not as the customer and not as the boss. And I think that's one of the failings that's happened in the last probably 15 years with policing is we've relegated the citizen to a customer and not our boss. Now, you don't treat the customers at work like you treat your boss, I guarantee you. But let's look at it. Let's be clear. Who's paying us? These citizens are paying us. So just maybe if we treated them like the boss, and that's not to say that they have to run the show because most of them don't have police experience. We're going to run the show. But at the same time, we need to be open to that criticism that when your boss gives you criticism, he's going to give it to you verbally or on paper, and you're going to adhere to it. But when our critics or our bosses give us criticism, they label a lot of times anti-police, bad person. So, you know, I think that the civilian police chiefs work out good, especially when we talk about meeting with police chiefs. A civilian will have more understanding with another civilian while they're managing a police department from a human resource perspective than someone who's done nothing but policing. That's all they've done their whole life. You know, they may have a bachelor's or master's in criminal justice. That's fine, but you're managing people and resources now. You move beyond working calls. You're in a different level. That's just my perspective on it. I'm going to leave your mic open, Gus. I got another caller for the 214 area code, 5160. What's going on? Good morning.
Good morning, Stan. This is Rob from the Roundtable. How you doing?
What's up, Rob?
I just wanted to I'm listening to the, you know, the discussion, and, I'm a little bit curious about something. Like, I saw the video with the lady out in Dallas that was arrested, unfortunately. My thing is, I think I heard you say it, transparency with police, but we got to also have it with civilians. Well, my thing is, how many white civilians are able to go in and turn in their merchandise if they feel like they've been wronged economically? You know, we noticed with the Black Wall Street, we never got reparations for the areas that were destroyed, and the police never really helped us with that. So then, my point getting to that is, when is it okay for a consumer to be a consumer, when they're black or when they're white? Because the video just showed us that a black person can actually ask the police, even while they're doing their – now, my thing is, yes, if they're there to protect the private property, okay, then there's private money probably kicking in somewhere. But a public consumer shouldn't have to get arrested just because they want to take a shirt back. That just doesn't make any sense, and I'm very confused at when there's ever been a non-minority that's been going through that situation, because I think there's where a lot of disconnect happens with transparency. You know, you don't.
Sure.
It's like, okay, we'll enforce the rule. We're going to enforce the rules to the letter of the law, and if you're white, we're probably going to try to ease up on the sentencing depending on what it is. But if you're black, we're going to punish you like as if everybody does this. And we've seen that happen consistently. A customer should not be arrested for simply being a customer. That makes no sense, in my opinion. But I wanted to get your
right.
I wanted to try to kind of chime in with you on that.
Okay, I know the video that you're talking about, but I'm going to say this. I've warned people off of property all the time. Okay, that mall is private property, period, point blank. That's somebody's business. Now, if you're asked to leave, this is what we're talking about this morning. We're talking about how do you get answers. And I don't know. I know what the video shows, and I know what folks said. But that officer on there, that Dallas officer, did exactly what he was supposed to do while working there. What we need to do more of when we don't agree is stop holding court on the scene. You're not going to win. Stop it. Stop it. If they're saying you need to leave, leave. You go home. You call and ask to speak to whoever runs that store or that mall or whatever. You make an appointment to see them. You sit down and document your facts. You get your date and your time. Then you go back, whether it's with an attorney or whether you meet with them or whether you do mediation or whatever it is, and that's how you handle it. You don't stand out there in a mall. I don't care how right you think you are. Haven't we learned anything? Trying to debate and argue and legislate these things on the scene is not going to work. Everybody becomes frustrated, and you're going to go to jail. Because you look argumentative, you may start out discussing, but as the video rolls, people become argumentative, and you end up looking crazy. Period. And now some folks are going to get twisted. I ain't walking away. I'm going to stand there and tell them what I think. Yeah, you do that, you're going to be calling your boo trying to get bail money, okay, at 7 in the morning. No officer has never said, and you guys hadn't seen any video, but they go, you know what, you're right, go turn in your shirt, have a nice day. I'm not saying the lady didn't have an argument. I'm saying that's not the place to argue it. See, you can have a good case and you blow it trying to litigate it in the middle of the mall. to say, okay, you'd like me to leave? Okay, I'm getting a criminal trespass warning. Okay, is your information on there? Yes. Is this information on there? Yes. Take that criminal trespass warning, walk out of there, ask to speak to whoever runs that mall, or get an attorney if that's what you so choose to do, and handle your business without having looked crazy on a video. I'm not saying that lady did. I didn't even watch all the video. I didn't need to. The officer was just as calm as he could have been. We cannot litigate this stuff on the street. I'm not talking about violent incidents. I'm talking about traffic stops. I'm talking about confrontations like that. You can't litigate it. You're not going to win. You're not. That is why we're talking about what we're talking about today. How do you go to a meeting? How do you prepare yourself? How do you write your facts? How do you present yourself? How do you get satisfactory answers? How do you keep people accountable? You do it by doing things decent and in good order. Sometimes people are caught up in making optics, and we want to make this video, and we want to be viral. We're viral, but we're nonsensical. We're nonsensical. You can't be confrontational at the scene and get up in court and want to be a victim. That's going to conflict. You don't think they'll show that victim or that video sitting up in court? We just went through that with the lady last week who talked about how traumatized she was when the officer pulled her over, and then we played the officer's video. She's just as pious and polite, and so was he. If you're going to video, record yourself being orderly. Record yourself being compliant. Because as long as you're compliant, they can't say you resisted. As long as you're doing what you were told to do, they can't say you were argumentative. That's going to go a lot further than standing there arguing. If they say, no, you can't return the shirt. Well, you know what? You really haven't lost anything because you bought the shirt anyway, so just go on and take it out of there. Go home, sit down, make your notes, catch your breath, go over everything that happened, get your stuff in good order, and then start making your phone calls. And you handle things the right way. Not being crazy. That's not going to work. We see that video after video after video. And I'm not talking about violence where people are caught up. I'm talking about just interacting with police. I see it from officers that act crazy in these videos that become overbearing. So they're not getting a pass here either, Rob. You know how I do this show. I'll tear everybody's ass up equally. That's why we do it. We got to have the hard talk. But sitting there, if you guys want to litigate on the side of the road, you're going to be in jail. Or you're going to be out of breath with it. And most of the time, people, I got a case. You don't have nothing, okay? You didn't have a driver's license, so you shouldn't be driving. You got a ticket going down the road. But in this lady's case, we're all different. I'm not trying to say what she did was wrong or right. She did what she thought was right. But me as a person looking at that, I'm looking at it going, did all that need to take place right there in the mall in front of people? Get the officer's name, get the security guard's names, get the date and time, get the name of the store, get the clerk's information. You got a receipt. You got the clerk's employee ID number on it. Go on down the road. Go home. If you got $1,000 to spend in the store, get a lawyer and light them up if you think you got a case. You know, I mean, that's just, and I'm just saying that's the way I would have handled it. I think it would have been a lot stronger than standing there arguing with an officer. And that officer, that Dallas officer, was calm. He was what a lot of us always say. Why they always snap out? That officer sat there just as calm, tried to explain again. So, you know, I mean, we can't say we want the officers to be calm and be interactive. Then when you get one that's doing that, you want to litigate.
You can't. I have a question on that.
Yeah.
I have a question on that part. I'm glad. Yes, the police officer is very calm. My thing is, you also said before, the police officers are peacekeepers. But peace isn't one way. You can't. I mean, we don't get to choose what part we're going to keep peace for unless we're being paid to do that. But I'm just saying, if you're a peacekeeper, then both sides have to have a compromise. Why is it one side has to get pushed out, you know, when they're only doing what they're allowed to do within the storefront? It's okay to say, okay, well, you need to leave the property, you need to leave the premises because you're being asked to leave, but we understand that you also bought something. and you do want to give that back, we'll escort you to the shop. You give that back, we'll escort you back to your car, and then you never come back. I mean, I don't see how that was ever a difficult, why that couldn't have happened.
But Rob, that store is private property. They can say who comes and who goes in that mall, period, point blank. If you bought something, now you want to return it for whatever confrontation was there. If they tell you no, tell me what you've lost. You've lost nothing. You got whatever the $50,000, whatever it is that you spent on that shirt, you got it on your way home with the memory of a bad event that you're going to follow up on later. They can say, no, we want you out. You're not returning that right now, today. And that's what that officer said. He said, you're not returning it today, not right now. He didn't say you couldn't. Now, let's go back to what we're talking about today, doing things the right way, protocol, making notes, meeting the right people, going through chain of command, following, getting answers, getting facts, getting your stuff together. You look a lot better when the store would come back then and go, you know what, we're gonna do the return for you. Thank you. And yeah, they may say you're welcome back or whatever when you handle things the right way, other than litigating them on the spot. And I didn't want to make the show about that lady, but bringing it up, I mean, that's a perfect example of why you need to do things the right way. Sure, there's times when you can't. There's times we all lose our temper. We get fed up with things. But one moment can make you look so crazy, you don't want to walk in a courtroom. An attorney, and I've got attorneys on my page that are friends of mine, and they'll tell you it's embarrassing for them to have to walk in and try to plead a case, and you look crazy out there at the scene. That judge is looking at them like, are you serious? But if you're going to pay them, they're going to present it. You know, I mean, especially when you got an officer that's that calm. You know, I'm just saying, that's my observations of it. I didn't pay much attention to the video. When it started to get outrageous and I saw how calm the officer was, and maybe I should go back and look at it. But, I wasn't really preparing that for this show. But that's a perfect example of why you need to take notes and do things the right way. Hang on one second. We got one more caller from the 203 area code, 1513. What's up?
Good morning, Stan. It's Charlie. Apologize for calling in late. Nothing much, my friend. Nothing much. I have to agree with you on that video. That officer was extremely calm. But I guess the thing about it is with mall security for me, I counted at least about 12 people. Were they anticipating a fight? I don't know that particular mall. In Dallas, but I assume it's like other malls around the country. But that's one question I have, is the amount of security that was present before the Dallas officer stepped up, and thank God that he did. And also, she kept saying that they went into Gucci, 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 and not being discriminatory or anything like that. But she stated she spent $1,000 on a shirt. And in my particular point, why are you going into Gucci? Usually people who look like they wear stuff like that, unfortunately, I don't. I can't afford it. You know, I can afford Target. I can afford Macy's, but I can't afford Gucci. But why in the world are you going in there and you're acting as crazy as she was? It was obviously she wasn't getting anywhere with security. Why are you just going to start going crazy, basically? That for the life of me, I could not understand. They told me you're not going back in the store. I wish I saw the beginning from the beginning when they went to Gucci. Maybe that would have explained something. Maybe there was joking or banter or, cussing. I don't know. But I also have to give kudos to that officer. It could have turned into a dangerous situation, or a violent situation, I should say.
It could have, but I'm going to give, that mother, I'm not going to throw her under the bus. I don't care what she buys, Gucci or Target or whatever, to each his reach. And if I don't cop it, ain't mine to have. George Clinton said that. Shout out to the P-Funk folks. Y'all know what I'm talking about. But, I mean, if that's her deal, go do what you do. Buy what you buy. I'm not going to even get on her about that. I am going to say, when it comes to our kids, all of us are going to be animated. So I'm not going to blame her for losing her temper or being frustrated, especially given today's climate. Now, I'm going to say it was unnecessary, but I don't know that lady's stress level or what she's been through that day. And I think that Dallas officer did a great job at saying, I don't know what this lady been through, and he kept his composure. But as far as what she buys, I mean, I think when, you know, and I've heard some people say that, why is she spending $1,000? It's none of your damn business. It's her money. Let her do it. If she can afford to do it, let her do what she does, you know. But the fact, my only thing with it was trying to litigate it right there. You know, it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work. Now, had she waited and listened to this show, she would have seen, let me leave out of here, get everybody's information, take my notes. That mall has a chain of command. And we've seen from Starbucks, look at how those brothers handled the Starbucks incident. They didn't go crazy in that store. They handled it the right way. They left out of there. They had the names, the dates, the times, and everything they wanted to do. And what did Starbucks do? Starbucks shut down, trained everybody. Knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. Trying to do a quick hit video and you want to get likes and you want, you know what, that's going to last till somebody put out the next ridiculous video. But when you handle yourself decent and in good order, that speaks for you. That goes a long way. That goes a long way. That makes these CEOs of these companies have to deal with you and look at you when you write stuff down. In policing, we have a saying. If it's not written down, it didn't happen. We show up, everybody wants to give us the history of everything that happened, and we go, well, wait, can you show me that written down? I ain't writing nothing down. Well, if you didn't write it down, it didn't happen. It's not important to you. If it's important, you'll write it down. You know, we've got to learn how to record events. Go home. Calm down. Sit down for a minute. Get your thoughts together. Don't get on Facebook telling everybody you have written nothing down. You look dumb. Don't get home calling up a whole bunch of relatives that wasn't even there trying to explain to them what happened because it makes you look dumb. Sometimes you're going to have to deal with somebody who's in a position of authority to render a solution or a resolution to your problem. If you look cockeyed and crazy, they're going to dismiss you. You can go get any lawyer you want to get. And that lawyer is going to look at you the same way. He'll take your money just because they take the case, they take the money sometimes. They know they can't win that case because you done blew it, acting crazy out there on the street. And then y'all want to say, well, man, that lawyer wasn't no good, man. He couldn't even win my case. We know you lost your case over Facebook, acting crazy. Ladies and gentlemen, you're not going to win on the side of the road. You're not going to win in the store. Charlie, as far as I don't care if they had 10 security guards or 350. My thing is, that's a high-dollar mall. I've never shopped there. I've never been to it. But from what I've got from some people that live up there, it's very expensive in there. They are going to have a bunch of security in there because they don't want the place robbed. I don't think the security's there to keep any particular person from coming in there. Those folks are trying to sell stuff. If you're going to come spend $1,000, they're going to let you spend that $1,000. Now, my question would have been, how were they able to walk in the door, go all the way to the store, spend $1,000, then all of a sudden get stopped on the way out? That's the question. Mm-hmm. See, you're acting crazy. If you're out there acting crazy, you should have just said, well, officer, I mean, we came in the front door. We walked all the way to the store. We went in and shopped around, and I got his size, the color he wanted, and I paid for it. The clerk didn't have a problem with it. We walked all the way up to this point. Can I just have the name of whoever complained? Well, ma'am, we're going to warn you away from the store. He's dressed inappropriate. That's fine. He may be dressed inappropriate. But that's when your attorney or your whoever you're dealing with says, well, if he's inappropriate, when did he get inappropriate? On the way out? When did he get inappropriate? After $1,000 was spent? See, when you sit back and think and you plan your questions out, you can look calm. You can tear them up, being calm. Get your facts right. Get your things straight. Don't sit there and litigate it on the spot. You know, I'm not disagreeing with you, and I didn't want to make this about the lady, but that's a perfect illustration of why there's a need to sit back and gather your facts. You know, we just saw the importance of gathering facts. And I hate to throw anybody under the bus, but I'm going to do it with the woman down here that accused the trooper wrongfully of sexual assault and all this mayhem. And, yes, several major people jumped on it and ran with the ball. and then had to come back and eat crow instead of just waiting. Okay, I hear everything that's going on. Let me sit down and line this out. Sometimes we need to wait. We don't know everything. We see a video, and that you don't know what brought that video about. You know, you don't know the facts that led up to that or what's going on. It's better to take your time. Some people want to be first. You better worry about being right, because some folks probably off that thing with the trooper are going to learn trying to be first will cost you. You know, I mean, there's enough blame in policing and communities to go back and forth, and I think sometimes we get so caught up in blaming and shifting the blame and pointing the other that we're not seeing our own faults, the police and the community, black and white. And that's why I like this show, because we all come here, and, you know, we all have our sides and our opinions and facts, and nobody's going to put down anybody's facts, but there's no sacred cows in here. Everybody is equal. You know, everybody is equal. But that Dallas officer, you know, and this is one of the things with Facebook that's kind of frustrating sometimes. And I know when these officers are wrong, I will light them up. I know. I'm one of the first ones. I will post it up and I'll put my opinion there. But, you know, when these citizens are wrong, we never call that out. We don't light them up unless it's Barbecue Becky or somebody like that. Where's the kudos for this Dallas officer? Why isn't somebody saying, you know what, this officer here handled this exactly the way it should have been handled? He doesn't work for the security company. It looked to me like he's working a part-time up there. But he handled it perfect. It didn't spiral. He didn't raise his voice. He didn't get all crazy. But no kudos to him. See, that's where, when people want to have police reform, that's where I have the problem, when we can't recognize, and yes, I agree, the bad officers or the good officers need to start calling out these bad ones. But you know what? The citizens need to start calling out the good officers, too, in some of these videos. We've all seen the bad ones. We know what they look like. But let's start holding the good ones up as an example of how something should be handled, how something should be done. That gives us a measuring stick. So when we light the bad ones up, we got away. And the same with the civilians. These people out here lying on officers, the Ferguson effect is real. I posted up on my page the results of some of these lies against officers, what it's doing. Officers are now stepping back. They're saying, call me when it's happened. I ain't preventing nothing. Because if I step in there and try to prevent, guess what? Somebody's going to complain on me, and I'm going to lose my job. See, we have to be careful when we say, I want government out of my life. I want government out of my life. I want government. Oh, whoa. Come handle my marriage, please. Come make my kids go to bed, police. These are real calls we get. Good morning, police. My kids won't go to school. See, there's enough on this plate that goes all the way around. When we talk about police reform and we talk about changing things, you know, we all need to sit down. Nobody has an upper hand in all of this, because we've all got to share responsibility in solving some of this nonsense and mayhem. At this time, real quick, I'm going to bring in my ace of the bullpen, Mr. TKD, Tyrone K. Dunmore. What's going on, Ty? Good morning.
Good morning, brother. Just sitting back, listening, taking some notes as supposed to be, like you said, get your notes out. I'm back to the issue which you started off with, meeting with administrators. Once we go in this situation, I'm in total agreement that we have to be proactive and it's not reactive, because when we go in there and react, that means we're on the attack. We're looking to blame. I call it the ABCs. We look to criticize, and we'd be disrespectfully about it. Or be disrespectful about it. Because when you're attacking and getting blamed and being criticized, what kind of energy do you start to energize the room with when you come in with that mindset? But if you're proactive, you analyze the facts, analyze the situation, you broaden your ideas. Our ABC should be analyzed, broadened, and critique it, and come forth respectfully, not beating the pound and the drum of the problems, but present the solutions to administrators. Some of the things that we came up with as a community: grab data, grab some facts, grab some information. Have a game plan, even if it's just a small draft of some things in writing, because going in there venting, and anybody knows about venting is nothing but exhausting heat, smoke, energy, and you end up losing a lot of steam when you just vent. And that's why a lot of people do vent, because they built up, they got all this stuff built up inside them, and they want to vent. That's the wrong place to call yourself on trying to come to some resolution or try to build meaningful relationships with your police departments. So you got to exhibit intelligence and restraint, not arrogance and a bunch of rhetoric, you know, because we're known to go in and start catching a moment, so to speak. So the goal should be, we want to desire and let the administration know, or whoever you're speaking to, our desire is to come in here and we want to work along with you. We have some ideas. We've written them down. We might even have typed them out. We have some solutions to what we see and feel, but more importantly, experience in our reality in our community. We want to form an alliance, a winning team, not further fumigate adversaries where we both end up losing opponents, because the police lose on one side because, again, the mistrust, and they're making their jobs harder, and so do the citizens. But realistically, the citizens lose more than the police, because, of course, we know how a lot of these cases end up. So I would say we have to let them know we're here for them. We're not here to go against them, and you got to set that tone. Be professional, as you said, brother. Be mature about it, not being amateur and immature. I would recommend designate one speaker of the house, so to speak, a speaker of the group. And you, even though you may want to go in there with a group of people, just have one person speak who speaks, you know, for the group in that meeting. The rest of the people keep their mouth shut. But get the person who you figure is the most qualified, the most refined, the most disciplined, the most educated, and the most experienced at dealing with police brass or law enforcement or elected officials or whatever. As they say, you know, they call them administrators. Well, let's add, let's minister, and let's be straight. Administer straight. You know, let's straight. Let's go in there straight. Don't go in there crooked. And when you go in there crooked, I mean you go in there with this guarded wall up. You're already on the defense, which leaves the premise of the other side feeling scared or fearful or mistrustful or strife. That doesn't set up a good vibration in the room or in the meeting. So you end up being offensive to both sides. Because when you go in there like that, of course, it's only natural if somebody's coming at you to be on the defense, but it's also offensive when you do that. So as long as we continue to look and view the problems, like you said, Stan, the optics, we'll always find problems, but we'll never ever really find a solution. Because arguments are just that. They're meant to argue. But when you argue, right, really most people, anybody who argues knows that you either both sides ain't listening. Maybe one side is listening, but arguments aren't good dialogue. It's not a conversation. It's not really talking to someone. You're talking at them. You know, it's more of an aggressive posture coming at someone, which we label bad. It's not good for the whole.
Right.
And that mouth, that attitude, is critical. So I've learned through the years, you know, cooler heads always prevail in any profession. Cooler heads always prevail. But so many times we choose the side of being hostile and exposing some type of hostility instead of being humble and having that humility. And that's that ego. That's that egomaniac, and it goes on both sides. To me, it's a serious health issue. When I mean health, mental health issue, that, like, somebody's got to win, somebody's got to lose, I got to prove my point.
Right.
No, we gotta choose our battles wisely. As you said, we can't adjudicate these things out on the streets, man. We got to stop this. Stop being at war, because every battle ain't meant to be fought a certain way. You know, you got to use intelligence, not ignorance, and stop using stupidity.
Right.
You know, the public cry seems to always be, we want freedom. But at that very moment, do people realize they're jeopardizing just that at that very moment, their very freedom? Don't we notice at that moment that by acting out like that, you know, again, you got to use your mind over matter. Too many times we go in there, we get all fired up, but then we question why we get fired on. We get all animated and then complain we're being
right.
mistreated like animals. Someone even will say we act like animals. Well, be so damn animated. Relax, cool out. If you're right, you're right. You don't have to, again, adjudicate it on the spot or whatever. walk away and live to see another day without having a bond put on you, or have the family got to get bail. And, you know, that ego is a monster, brother. And I'm just going to end with that, man. So my whole thing is, man, we got some emotionally disturbed people on this planet, whether they're in a uniform or whether they call themselves civilians. And till we address that and correct that and discipline that, it's always going to be this constant war of one's the adversary, them against us, them against, you know, instead of building as we want to do on, as we attempt to do on this platform, building meaningful, healthy relationships between law enforcement and the citizens, citizens with law enforcement. Thank you, Stan.
All right, brother. Now, everybody's mic's still open because we're about to go into, I extended the show for a minute because we got to go into the other side now. So everybody that's wearing blue, that's been clapping so far, and amen, and don't run now because, you know, just like a pancake, you got to flip it and get the other side. You know, to my profession, I say this. We need to oftentimes, we fail to understand that, you know, some of these incidents, whether it's Tamir Rice, Terrence Crutcher, Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, Walter Scott, and oh, Lord, here he comes bringing that stuff up. Yes, I got to bring it up. And people say, well, that didn't happen in our city. Why do you bring it up? See, a lot of times people view these instances. As black people, we view them, and we don't see it as, well, that's not where we're at, because we see other incidents that happen close to where we're at enough that we say, but by the grace of God, there go I. So these things stay in the forefront of our minds. Now, when you have instances where people have followed the rules, they have played the game straight, they have kept their notes, they have kept calm, they have done all these things, and you got a system that marginalizes them, that refuses to do what it is mandated to do. See, now this is the other side of it. Now, we went through what the citizens need to do and getting in line and getting their ducks in a row. We did that for 45 minutes. Now we're going to get on the other side of it now. What do you want people to do when you blow them off? And people say, well, not my department. No, maybe not your department, but when it happens in another department in a high-profile case, we all as officers catch the blame for that, no matter where we are. But we don't call BS on something that is BS. Well, you know, I don't want to look bad against the profession. When they did what they did outside of the scope of the profession, they went outside of the norms of protection. You call that mess out. We don't have no problem doing it with civilians. So when you start talking about having trust and wanting the citizens to do all these things that I talked about, have resolution, fact-finding, not argue, not cover up anything, not blame, not deflect, we need to go back and say the same thing to us. Let's be consistent in our communications with citizens. Let's be forthcoming when we can. Now, police departments have gotten a lot better. We're getting these videos out. I'd like to see more of these dispatch audio tapes come out of the 911 calls so people can now understand what brought the officers to the scene, not just what they did when they got there. The video is good, but if you don't know what they were being told when they got there, you don't know really why they did what they did. You just see that they did it. So there is work to be done, and there is transparency. You know, there's been some progress. But I think policing as a profession has got to do a better job of understanding the impact that some of these cases, Tamir Rice or Alton Sterling or Terrence Crutcher or Walter Scott or Philando Castile, these things are indelible cases that leave scars. And people watch out for that because they've been in a situation where they could have been any one of those men whose names I just mentioned. They could have been, and they know it. And that's how a lot of black people will view these stops. And some white people, man, that could have been me. Woof. It doesn't matter that it's that town. It can happen. So we, as officers, need to be cognizant. You know, when you approach a car nowadays on a traffic stop and you see a kid in there can't even get his driver's license out because his hand's shaking so bad. If you gave him a cup of milk by the time you walked back up there with the ticket, you'd have butter. Hand's shaking that bad. Not for getting the ticket, they're worried about getting shot. And we can go, well, that's silly. That's not going to happen. I ain't going to shoot them. But they don't know that. They know what they see and what they hear. And they make me go back and do my barbering. I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. And officers can't go personal. Well, I'm not that type of officer. That's you. What you do and what your department may do are two different things. what the next shift does is a different thing. And everybody's mic's open right now. If you guys want to comment, just, you know, we're getting down to it. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to start up there with Gus. 2 minutes, Gus, you can go in on what I went in, or you got 2 minutes, anything you want to talk about.
Okay. Well, I haven't I'll get a chance to after, you know, you hang up to go see the video. But from what I understand and from what you guys have been telling me, that this guy, the police officer, handled it well, whether it be the guard or the police officer. If the guard is there in charge of the store and he has to follow a certain protocol, then he has to. But if you're going to yell and try to, you know, bogart your way into to returning something, then you're bucking the authority that's in place there. And, of course, you are right. You can't adjudicate a case at the side of the road. You know, I told you on a number of different shows, Stan, I taught my boys how to stay alive. I mean, don't sit there and try to adjudicate at the crimes, I mean at the scene, when you get pulled over, because that's a lose-lose situation. You can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you have to talk to somebody, man, you know, try to do it with respect. I know sometimes it's hard because you're boiling inside and you want to cuss every officer out on the scene, but that's not going to help you either. You know, just, you know, try to be humble. And I'm not saying curl up in your shell and be a punk, but, I mean, you got to try to think 2 moves ahead. If you know you can't sit there and argue on the side of the road with the officer, then, you know it's a lose-lose situation. I have yet to see where somebody sit there argue with an officer on the side of a road at a traffic stop and actually come out on top. So, therefore, that's telling you that it doesn't work. But I really did enjoy the show today, man. Great topics, and also like the commentary by TDK. And I appreciate what you're doing, brother. And be peaceful out on the road and come home to your family.
Appreciate you, brother. Thanks for calling in.
No.
All right, Bob. What's going on, man? You up next. 2 minutes. Anything you want.
Just wanted to give a shout-out to the platform again. Thanks again for having me on, Stan. You know, shout-out to all the guys on the panel today. And definitely just one more time, shout-out to Behind the Blue Curtain. You can find us on Facebook Roundtable presented by GCC Productions or facebook.com/GCC. That's Gary Charlie Charlie, P-R-O-D. One of our latest stories that we posted within the last couple of days, or I actually posted a video for it this morning. Nathan Larson, a potential independent candidate in Virginia for, I believe, the Senate, is running for Congress in general, has admitted to being a pedophile, a white supremacist, and and wanted to rape his wife, and recently raped his wife and bragged about it. We got to expose more and more of these evil people and these evil, this evil agenda, because I think that it trickles down at some point. I think you would agree, Stan, with our police force. If you're watching people at the federal level do whatever they want, and be racist and be misogynist, and rape children. It's like, I mean, if you're going to do that, then of course, why wouldn't we have issues at the local level with police force possibly doing the same thing, or being involved in prostitution, being involved in the drug trade, or just, inappropriately treating, civilians that just might not look like them. I mean, I think we have to add up all these little things because they make a bigger difference in the nature of, how the law of the land operates. Thanks again for having me on, Stan.
All right, brother, man. Appreciate you calling in. All right, Charlie, what's going on? 2 minutes, brother. Anything you want to talk about?
Nothing much. Again, Stan, myself, again, thank you for having us on. And I'm my brother's keeper with myself and Walter Gus Glover. I just want to say one thing. When I was growing up, my grandmother used to take me and my cousin shopping. She made sure that we were dressed appropriately, not dressed in a suit and tie, but dressed appropriately. And I think if we want to stop or shop at some of these expensive stores, dress appropriately. People do look at how you conduct yourselves and how you act in public. And if you do not want to draw attention to yourself, you have to look at yourself, look in the mirror before you go out. Still to this day, I make sure what I wear, it might not be the best, but it's ironed, it's neat, and I make sure that I conduct myself when I go out in public in a way that would not embarrass my parents, embarrass my family. Think of the name that you carry, the legacy that you carry. And I also give that advice to my daughter, and I would just want to say happy 19th birthday. My daughter Samantha is turning 19. Your daddy's very proud of you and what you do and what you were trying to accomplish in life. And I think if we're all there for not only the children that we gave birth to, but the children in our communities, whatever they try to do, if you know that they're doing something positive, pat them on the back, shake their hand, tell them that you're with them. God bless, and until next week, Stan, again, I'm just going to echo what Gus said. Get home safely to your family.
All right, brother. Appreciate you. Thank you. Before I go to Tyrone to close this out, I'm just going to add in something that came to my mind when Charlie was talking. You know, as far as the whole mall thing and you know, dress codes, people say, well, they shouldn't have a dress code. You should be able to wear what you want. You know, there's a whole lot of nightclubs folks go to. They'll tell you no jeans. And if you got jeans on, you ain't getting in. Black, white, rich, or poor, you're not getting in the club. Period. And we have no problem adhering to that dress code. These same clubs will tell you that there are no tennis shoes. Nobody's arguing at the front when they say, nope, no tennis shoes. We go home, change, and come back. No T-shirts. No gang-affiliated colors or whatever. So there are conditions and dress codes for everything. I bet you when you stand before that judge, if he says you better wear a tie in this courtroom, I bet you'll be in there with a tie on. So, you know, I'm just saying within everything, you know, people can argue about the dress code of the mall. You don't like it, buy a mall, set your own dress code. But until then, that's what their rules are. Like I said, my only problem with it was that the boy was able to come in and go all the way up there with his mom and shop and buy what he wanted and get stopped on the way out. That's what I don't understand. But that's why we talked about ways of sitting down, writing, and reaching answers and responses to some of this stuff so that it makes some sense. Ty, you want to go ahead and take us out of here, man?
Well, more importantly, about dressing, the most important thing is behaving. And though you can dress a certain way, what good does it make if inside you act in a whole nother way? So dressing is a, excuse me, could be a cover, could be a front. We got to work on inside of us. Inside of us is all jacked up. A lot of people are looking for trouble. A lot of people are looking for something to talk about, to gossip about, to criticize outside of themselves instead of looking inside and seeing themselves as a very important, integral part of this thing called life. When I talk about ego, look up the word ego, it's the I. And so many people keep using I. We're not on earth with the I principle. We came to earth on the we principle, the us principle, the our principle. Even in your religious texts, it says that let us make man in our image and our likeness. Of course, women as well. So when you do, when you think about I, you always got to think about, catch that now, because we all have an I. We all have an ego. We all have, that's part of the what we call the superficial us. But what you do affects the we. In other words, if you go out there and do something crazy or do something stupid or do something that is not productive to what we call growth, to the growth and development of we call life, it's going to affect the we, the us, the our. Who's the us, the we, the our? Your friends, coworkers, your family, your mama, your daddy, whoever is on that other side. There's a we, because nobody came in this world by themselves. People are loved regardless who they are. They got loved ones all over. So think about that when you keep putting out the I principle. The I principle is more of a selfish principle than it is anything else. When you think of the terms of us, our, we, and I'm not talking about when I say our nation, I'm talking about the nation of human beings, humanity. I'm not talking about America. I'm not talking about what different ethnic group, whether you want to call yourself black, white, Latino, Spanish. That's the problem. We like to divide and dice ourselves up into these little categories that make us think we're more better or special than other people. get back to the us, the we, the our. It's called humane being. The humane part we're struggling on. Being, yes, we are being. We're being foolish in a lot of places. We're being ignorant in a lot of places. We're being stubborn in a lot of places. We're being narcissists in a lot of situations.
Right.
And we think it gives us power. And we see what some of the people who carry those attributes with them are doing. You got to think of the greater whole. And that's the earth we live on, the planet we live on, the quality of life we want for ourselves and those after we're gone, to leave it so it was a little better because we lived. But if we come here and continue to further destroy, contaminate, attack, all the negative attributes of not giving growth, what do we want? Do we want racism to continue to grow? If we don't want to continue to grow, then stop giving it birth. Start using another word. Change the narrative by change the language. And when you start changing the language, you start feeling a certain way differently and thinking a certain way. Because as I said in one of my posts a while back, people can say you're a black narcissist. They can call he's pro-black this. I'm pro-human being. Being human toward one another. Being humane toward each other. Regardless if we don't get along or may not like each other. We can still be respectful toward each other. We can still be cordial toward each other. We don't necessarily always have to get along. And by nature, we're not always going to get along. That's the law of nature. But that don't mean we got to tear each other apart. That don't mean we got to rip each other apart. That don't mean we got to look at ways to criticize and antagonize and to, constantly brutalize and each other in all kind of ways, whether it's with our mouths, with our attitudes, our behavior, our own actions. Live the life that you want your granddaughter to live, your grandson to live or have. And if you're out there doing crazy stuff, would you want your grandson, your granddaughter, your daughter, your mama, your grandmama doing what you're doing? See, that's the we principle. Because it is a we that we're attached to life. It's not about just you. And we got to get off this I, me, my principle. Because that's what's killing us. That's what's killing the planet. That's what's causing havoc, murder, and mayhem. Because I have a drug habit. I got to go carjack somebody. I got to go break in somebody's house and rob. Because I have a problem with my sexuality. I got to go rape somebody. Because I have a problem with insecurities. I got to try to control somebody. Because I. Get back. Get
We're
away
down
from
to
mine.
A minute, Josh.
I'm done, brother. I'm done with I. I'm done with I. I'm with us, we, our. That makes us family, regardless what ethnic, racial, whatever background you want to call yourself. I want for you what I want for myself. That's the only how I should come about. That's justice. That's equality. Thank you, Stan.
All right, brother. Look here now. Everybody, we're down to that last minute. I want to appreciate everybody that came on Facebook Live. Crew showed up. And I'm going to have to go back and read a lot of y'all's comments. Y'all had some good dialogue going. Like I said, you can go to stanmason.com and you can hit on the listen tab. And you'll have the whole lineup of shows. You can go through, pick all the ones you want, share them, tell your friends about them, do what you want to do with them. You can also click the view tab, and you'll see all the YouTube videos, that are on there. So you guys feel free to share all of that stuff. And, of course, let your friends know about the Facebook. If you got a show topic or something that you want to discuss, feel free to inbox me on Facebook. Let me know what you think. But then be prepared to do some research, because if you give me a topic, you're probably going to co-host with me. Because if it's important enough for you to bring to me, it's important enough for you to be in it with me. So like I said, this is not my show. This is our show. So when you suggest that you're in here with me, love you guys. We're going to get out of here, and we're going to see everybody next week. Same bat time, same bat time.
What the hell's going on out here?
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back, because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.
Thank you. Thank you.